I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And Andy is not here again, but we are still streaming things.
Yeah, baby. That's what we do here.
We find the things to stream. We are pretty sure that brings you the best, the brightest, the strangest, the sexiest TV shows and film properties available to stream right from your home in an ocean of streaming content. Fucking shit. Andy's got to do it now. I passed the mantle to him.
Yeah, ever since we started doing the, again, we're remote, but since we went back to remote, you've messed up the intro at both times.
There's a lot going on. I'll be honest with you. It's a little tougher. I do enjoy the convenience of it because you text me like, do you want to just do it remotely? And I was like, fuck yes, I do, because I'm going to fry up some geta and some eggs and make little geta and egg and cheese wraps with tortillas for dinner.
Say it to me softer, daddy.
Yeah, you dig that? Geta fan?
Yeah, I love Geta. Geta in me. You know what I'm saying?
Do you like egg tacos as much as I do?
I don't know if I've had an egg taco, but that sounds good.
It's like a huevos rancheros, you know?
I like those.
Breakfast burrito, kind of. That's what I do. Anyway, as I was thinking about that, and I was like, I get to that a lot quicker. Sure. But when we record remotely, first off, it's almost more distracting to have you on video than it is you in person, just because... I don't know. I'm like, ooh, Steve's kitchen in the background. What's going on? I see
his dogs are walking around.
Yeah, I see Ellie running around. And then occasionally, because of my connection, the video will freeze, but the audio is fine. And so I'm curious as to whether the audio is really fine. And then, you know what I mean? So all that's going on in my head while I'm trying to chant this 4-sentence intro that I wrote 6 months ago. And, you know, that's my excuse.
Hey, you know, it's a good one. We all have excuses. And all of them are valid.
But I should be able to do it. You know, I'm a fucking professional.
You know, sometimes, you know, when your mind just kind of dumps information to make room for new, maybe when you realize that Andy could pull it out of his ass without any trouble, your brain was subconscious like, well, I don't need this anymore. Andy's got it.
But Andy's not here.
That's true.
I miss him greatly.
And we're in a pickle.
I got to try again. Okay. Okay.
All right. Chris, back to one. Take two.
My name's Chris. My name's Andy. My name's Steve. And this is Streaming Things, the only podcast we're pretty sure that brings you the best, the brightest, the strangest, the sexiest TV shows and films available to stream right from your home in an ocean of streaming content. No, it's in an ocean of streaming networks vying for your attention.
There you go.
We are your lighthouse, your beacons of broadcast. You are curators of content.
You did it. I'm so proud of you. Bask in the glory, my friend. You did it.
I want to sell a Streaming Things t-shirt that has that entire monologue on it. You know what I mean? Where like some of the words are bigger than others, with like lighthouse would be huge, with a little lighthouse as the eye.
Yeah, listener, write in if you think that that shirt interests you.
Yeah, if that t-shirt interests you.
Do you guys want merch? Would you buy merch? Let us know. We'll sell some fucking merch.
Actually, Steve did come up with some really cool, like the Patreon symbol of streaming things that has the black background.
Ooh, the sexy black and white
t-shirt with that on there. And I was convinced that I was going to see those around the Christmas tree. And then
Steve was broke.
I mean, there's some financial issues going all around the streaming things table in general. But yeah, those are neat. So if you're interested in that sort of things, or if you just want to chat, write into streamingthingspod@gmail.com at any time. We'd love to hear from you. You can also follow us on Twitter as a group at streamthingpod. You can follow me personally at C. Michael Writes and Steve.
You can follow me at Steve May 13, baby. Not the baby, it's just Steve May 13.
The best to me, baby.
Thank you. It's an honor.
And you can also check this out, guys. If you're interested, if you're on the TikTok, if you're one of the cool kids, you can follow some streaming things appearances at Movies Are Therapy. It's at Movies Are Therapy. I've been getting a little action on the TikTok.
Yeah, you have.
Popping off, as it were, going some minor virality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about movies.
It's the only time you ever want to hear that you're suffering from minor virality, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I've got to say, yeah, for sure. I'm viral. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. That's the digital age for you. I really enjoy, for the most part, I think it's the most positive online experience I've had. But now that the videos are doing rather well, I do get all the other types in the comments as well. And that is just fascinating mental gymnastics of some of those folks. But I find that like being really nice to them is the quickest way to end it.
Yeah. You kill them with kindness,
that might be obvious to everyone. I'm not sure, but I've been doing this over the past few months and it is hilarious how quick it turns around. For instance, I did a few videos on like Oscar trivia and, you know, Academy Awards facts. And, one of the guys commented, you know, because I did a video about movies that have won all five of the Big Five awards. And the mm-hmm. Big Five are like, you know, Best Director, Best Picture, blah, 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 blah. And the guy commented and he was like, you forgot Kramer versus Kramer. Time to redo your video. You just said it super confidently. Which, plant a flag there, that's another fascinating feature of humanity. And so I commented, actually, no, Meryl Streep won for Best Supporting Actress, which doesn't count. But understandable misconception. And he said, oh, sorry, thought I had you. And it was over. Do you know what I mean?
But yeah.
Why did he come at me so strong? And why did he not spend the time commenting instead Googling to verify? Because I have this like terrifying, just debilitating fear of being confidently wrong online. Maybe that's just a feature of my personality. I would never, ever, especially if I was going to be that rude, not triple check first, even if I was super sure of it. If I was arguing with a flat earther, I wouldn't come out that strong without a quick Google, is Earth round, for sure.
You forgot about the curvature of the Earth, numbnuts.
Yeah, but before I press send, I would double check. You know, and it took me all of 2 seconds to just make sure that he was wrong before I replied. I just think that's an interesting feature of the internet.
That's just an interesting feature of the human race, my friend.
Even though all information is available immediately, I'm going to go ahead and come at this stranger in a really rude way, confidently. No need to check.
It's low stakes shittery is what it is.
Because like, you know, in the mid-90s in elementary school on the playground, if another kid was like, you forgot Kramer versus Kramer,
you'd be like, oh, I guess I did.
Because he'd have to go to the library, find a book on the Oscar. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, check his alphabetical encyclopedia. You know, do you have those in your house? Do you have like all 22 encyclopedia books for reference?
No, but my mother does.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. My mom had those. So that's what I would have had to do to argue with the kid on those. So that's understandable. But
if I was in elementary school and a kid was like, you forgot Kramer versus Kramer, duh, I would be like, I don't know what that is, stupid. Like, I would be very impressed if an elementary school kid was like Dustin Hoffman and
You weren't Meryl a Streep. Huge fan of Meryl Streep in elementary school?
God, no.
Oh, wow. We just had a way different elementary experience then. What about Betty Davis?
Worse.
Katharine Hepburn? Wow.
Worse. In elementary school, the only people I knew that were famous were Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa, not even the actors that played them. And then Kermit the Frog. Yeah, I knew those three famous people in elementary school.
Well, I know, because of TikTok, I know a lot more Oscar trivia than I ever thought I would. For instance, do you know what movie has won the most Oscar awards ever?
One?
Mm-hmm. Actually took them home. Yeah.
Gone with the Wind?
It is actually a three-way tie, but for 11. So 11 is the most.
Return of the King.
It's Return of the King. It is Ben-Hur.
Oh, Ben-Hur. Okay.
And Titanic.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a three-way tie. But the I actually got in a lot of, I know I'm just going on and on about TikTok, but I think this is hilarious. So, and then in the video, I had said that Return of the King takes the cake because A, I'm biased, and B, that's what a lot of the articles I was reading about it had said. And it made sense to me at the time. But when people tried to hold me accountable for it, I had a hard time defending it. Return of the King takes the cake because it won in every single category that it was nominated. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Titanic had 14 nominations, took home 11 and so on. And everybody's commenting like, why does it win because it had the same amount of awards and less nominations? And I was like, because, oh, shit.
It's batting 100%. Is that how, yeah, is that the sports metaphor?
Yeah. I think that's valid. And that's the way I see it. Like, it was undefeated and just did not compete in the other categories. And the guy was like, undefeated. It competed. It just didn't get nominated. And I was like, that might be fair. I don't know what it submitted, you know, eligibility for. Let's just say it wins because it's dope. And we'll just leave it at that. By the way, Steve, do you know why the Academy Award is called an Oscar?
Well, this is cheating because I actually watched that video made about the subject.
No, that is cheating.
But you can tell the listener, let me pretend like I haven't heard it, all right?
Yeah, start over.
Feed me the line.
Steve, do you know why the Academy Award is called an Oscar?
I don't, Chris. Well, illuminate me.
I will indeed illuminate you, sir.
Thanks.
Nobody knows. Is the real answer. But legend has it that in the 30s, Margaret Halleck was the, at the time, the librarian of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and she later became the director. But she remarked upon seeing the award sometime in the 30s, some people say 1931 specifically, when she looked at it, she said, that looks like my Uncle Oscar. And then the name.
A bald, unshaven man.
But they don't know for sure because there was a, he wrote for the New York Daily News. His name was Sidney Skolsky, I believe. He claims to have invented the term. In 1934, he was the first one to publish the word Oscar. And it was like in reference to a vaudeville joke. But then others claim that Walt Disney on stage had called the award an Oscar prior to 1934, thereby, you know, ruining Mr. Skolsky's claims. I just think it's all fascinating stuff, yeah. Right? I went way down the rabbit hole.
It is such a weird name, the Oscar, when it's applied to the Academy Award. It's the Academy Award of Motion Pictures, right?
Yeah. No, it's weird how you made that TikTok video, never even thought about why we call it an Oscar. Mm-hmm. It was just so in my lexicon.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about it. Didn't find out till doing my research that they didn't officially change the name of the award ceremony to the Oscars until 2013 to rebrand. I didn't know. It just felt like my entire life, we just always called it the Oscars.
Right.
But it's actually technically called the Academy Award of Merit, even today.
I think, I don't know, there's something more prestigious about, ooh, I'm getting an Oscar instead of getting a merit. Like,
yeah, you know, nobody wants an Academy Award of Merit, but everybody wants that damn Oscar.
Merit is one of those things like, yeah, it's a good thing if you get a merit, but it's typically you associate that word with like, oh, good, I did my homework on time in school. I get a merit. You know, yeah. It's like, what do you fucking do? I made Titanic. I'm James Cameron. I deserve something greater than a merit.
Yeah, I feel like Enza got merits. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like a European grade school thing. Do they even call it grade school?
I don't know. Well, kindergarten is a German, has German heritage roots, that word kindergarten.
Kindergarten.
Yeah.
I know that they call colleges is uni, Right, Enza? You going to uni? Did you go to uni?
We should have Enza on the show sometime.
Yeah, I would love to. Oh, good luck getting those time zones matched up.
Right? I used to do a podcast years ago. I used to do a podcast with a guy who lived in England. And so it was like a
five. You said that with a question mark, and I don't know.
Well, for a second, I was trying to remember like what was the town he lived in, and then in the moment I decided it wasn't important.
It doesn't matter. It's not America.
He was near Newcastle at one point, but for not most of the time we recorded together. But maybe he was in London at that point. Anyway, but so it was like a 5-hour time difference. So we always had to, I had to really plan like, okay, it was usually like I had to do it in the mornings because, you know, it'd be the evening for him. And like, we couldn't do it at like 9 o'clock at night for me because it's 2 a.m. for him. So it was a hard thing to do, but we made it work. I miss that dude. His name
was
Ben.
Was that the wrestling show?
Yeah, it was K-Fabulous Wrestling Radio. You can find Ben. He's actually very successful. He has a successful YouTube channel called Triple Jump where they discuss video games. So, and he has a beautiful, buttery voice. Go check him out. I think he does voiceover work for the UK Netflix channel. Like they always put out videos like this week coming out on Netflix, and it's him like reading the synopses of whatever's new is coming out with. So
I want to get into voice work, and I feel like if I was British, that would be a lot easier.
At least over here it would be.
Yeah, like people just really go for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't fake it because it's offensive, and I switch nationalities accidentally all the time.
All right, what's this then?
Yeah, I tried to do a Tom Holland accent on a TikTok the other day, and it ended up Australian, and I just started laughing. I don't know why.
Hit me with your Tom Holland.
I can't, apparently. I definitely can't do it now.
I can do a bullseye Tom Holland.
Let's hear it.
Hello, sir. I'd like to be in the Spider-Man. Can I be in the Spider-Man movie, please, sir?
It's Oliver Holland. It's Charles Dickens' Tom Holland.
I mean, that's Tom Holland to me. Whenever he's in interviews, I can't spoil the new Avengers movie. Please don't ask me questions.
I'm dating Zendaya. She's really tall.
It is shockingly accurate. Oh, my God. It's perfect. And it's funny to me that happened to me because I can't even really do Australian on command. Like, I can't do it on purpose. I've always tried and come off British. So then when I did my Tom Holland and it was Aussie, I was really confused. Where did that come from? That's been in me the whole time. The whole time.
It was always in you, man. You just needed to unlock it.
Anyhoozle. So on today's show, we're not just going to riff and raff, but that's actually a lie. That's exactly what we're going to do. But
we're effing and jeffing, you know.
It's a guided riff and raff. Today is our Valentine's Day episode. We hope you're all having a phenomenal Valentine's Day. If you don't have someone to share it with, that's fine. Fuck society's expectations. If you're in a country that you don't even know what I'm talking about, good for you. Good for you.
And just because you guys are listening to us and you can listen to us, we have a surprise for you. Look under your chair. There's a Valentine's note from us. Go ahead. Open it. Go ahead.
Hope yeah, you're not you got driving. It.
No, I hope you are. Look under your chair right now.
Somebody somewhere is on a commute. They slid their seat back. They couldn't reach the brake pedal. And there was actually nothing there. And you can guess the rest. Good job, Steve. That's on your conscience.
Well, you know, I'm just a rascal.
Pranked you. Nothing there. Now you're dead.
You've been pranked, bro. Just a prank. Today,
for Valentine's Day, we're going to talk about some of our favorite on-screen romances. We're going to talk about love at the movies a little bit. And we did something very similar last year. So I'm going to try to avoid, I didn't do any like actual professional research, re-listen to that video to make sure I brought up different films or anything. No, didn't do that. That would be really out of character. I don't think that's what our listeners expect.
We're just having a laid back conversation. When one of the three pillars of this show is missing, the show becomes a lot less researchy and Able. A lot more like, let's just hang out and have fun and see what trouble we get ourselves into.
That brings us to our first and I think best segment, Crossing Streams. Crossing Streams is the segment where each week we tell you about the films and TV shows that we've been streaming since last we met, hoping to bring something new and special into your life. Maybe you hadn't heard of it, or maybe you heard of it, but you hadn't gotten a chance to check it out yet. And now you're inspired to do so. That's the idea behind Crossing Streams. Steve, Chris, what have you been streaming?
Well, this week has been kind of an odd week for me. I've gotten a little bit of some hard and asinine news that kind of hurts me financially that I'm struggling through. So like dealing with that kind of stuff, I didn't get a lot of time to stream anything really new. I will talk about the two examples that I have streamed this week. But just going into it, know that I wasn't able to do what I normally do and watch as much as I normally do. I do want to talk about briefly, it's been a while since we talked about it. My improv classes are continuing. They are...
How's it going?
They're going really, really well, man. The improv teacher pulled me aside one day and was like, dude, you're a natural improv person. So I hope you keep coming to class.
Yes. And,
trust me, I have, mined that, joke.
Fear not, Chris, that joke has been thoroughly utilized.
That horse hath been beaten plenty. but no, it's been a lot of fun. So I'm in the introductory course. I have two more classes left before that wraps up. Actually, no, one more class and then a final showcase where people can come and watch us perform.
Ooh, improvise.
So, Chris, if you want to come, just let me know. I'll give you the deets on that and you can watch me make an ass of myself.
I would love to watch that any day of the week. And it reminds me of the another film podcast. I think there's only two. It's Us and Them. It's called the Slash Filmcast. Actually, now it's called the Filmcast. They rebranded and they were talking about Murderville and Jeff Cannata is one of the hosts. He does a lot of improv and somebody made the joke that the show gets old pretty quick, but it's really cool. It looks like it was a lot more fun to film than it is to watch that show because it looks like it was a blast to film the show. And Jeff, having done a ton of improv in his life, is like, I can confirm it is extremely fun to do. And probably not so much to watch, but we had a blast. And I thought of that immediately when you said that we're doing a big showcase. And but maybe that's not true. I've never seen an improv.
Well, hopefully it goes well. Today we played we did a course that was really fun. Last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, because we had to cancel last week because of the snowstorm. But 2 weeks ago, we all had like three strips of paper and just wrote down a random ass line, whatever. So like I wrote down, you got any more Beanie Babies? Like that, for an example, that's like a line that I wrote. And then this week, what the game was, is people would go up on stage two at a time and the instructor would grab five of these suggestions out of the bowl and just toss them on the ground. And what you and your partner did is you just start talking, you start creating a scene together. And then whenever you feel like the moment is right, you would bend over and grab one of those pieces of paper. And then you had to sell whatever that paper was.
And like make it fit in the context. What do you mean sell it?
You had to legitimize why you would say it. So it could be random as hell. Like for instance, my partner and I were going back and forth. I forget exactly what we were talking about. I think she had brought up the Bengals game or something. And she was like, you going to watch the game? Like, oh man, I'm so excited about the game. I love the football. I love the sports. I love the points. I love the things. Let's see them all. And she's like, what are you planning on doing this week to celebrate? I'm like, oh, let's see. And I pulled up the piece of paper and the piece of paper just said, do you like apples? And so I had to figure out on the spot how to fit that line into what we were talking about watching a Super Bowl game. So I just held my hand up to her. I'm like, do you like apples? Can you take me to the store? If you take me to the store right now, I'm going to get you some apples. Because that's a great tasty treat to have at the Super Bowl. And she's like, yeah, we can go to the orchard. And I'm like, we can go to Kroger. I don't need to go to an orchard. I'm not fancy or anything. So it was it's stuff like that. And a partner of mine got one that was like in the middle of their conversation about like hating their neighbor. He wrote his prompt that he wrote picked up was, thank you for meeting me. Let's decide how are we going to kill the goddamn Batman. and everyone did a really great job of kind of morphing their stories around what they randomly were pulling out of the hat, essentially. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of good.
It sounds good really times. Fun. You invited me to join the advanced course, and I'm like, well, I didn't get the basics, right? So everybody's going to be more improv-y than I am. And I'm not super doing hot financially either, right? So obviously the course costs a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And then again, I always have an irrational fear of time commitments. So it's like the nature of streaming things is we'll record sometime on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. But if we said blank day at blank o'clock every week, that would stress me out because then it's what if like a cool thing happens during that time? And it's not, it doesn't matter at all. Then Steve will be like, okay, let's reschedule. But in my mind, I'm like, no. Ah. So the fact that anyway, so I wanted to let you know on air instead of privately, I'm still waffling on that. But I do think I should do it because it's something I wouldn't normally do. It's because I'm nervous about it. Those are usually the best things in life.
Trust me, dude. And like you would be fine. You'd be great at it. Like
how many people are there?
In my class, my class is actually large. Like the instructors, like this is an abnormally large class and there's probably like 15, 16 of us. Mm-hmm. And she's like, normally the classes are only like six people. So our class is like abnormally huge.
Yeah. That's like over double. I'm good at math.
You get a merit.
That is a callback.
But no, it's a lot of fun. You'd be great at it. Like there are some people, like everyone's doing great and everyone's at like different levels of comfortability in there. Like some people are there just to try to open up. Some people struggle more than others. Some people are really, really naturally good at it. But everyone there is incredibly supportive of one another. And it's almost like creative therapy. Like we were talking about how the podcast is therapy for dudes. This is just like, it's almost like another way of therapy because at least our instructor is very much about, opening yourself up and being vulnerable and, putting that out in the world. But also like if you're in the class, you accept that and work with that with someone. That's a big part of improv. Sure. But no, it's great. You should do it. Onto the things I've been streaming. We did get the finale of The Book of Boba Fett that came out on Disney Plus. Last week I mentioned I was a little worried, like how are they going to pull all these narrative strings together? And I think for the most part they do. Fortunately enough, there wasn't a very deep story to really pull together. They just
had that was to their benefit.
They just had a lot of threads kind of dangling out in the ether. And luckily it was kind of weird. It was almost a Avengers level style, like team up where they got everybody to come back through the portals to fight these dudes that are dangerous.
I guess, right.
And everyone still kind of sucks at it. But it's like one of our listeners, Sarah, she texted me because she knew I was watching it. She's like, how did you like the finale? And I said, objectively, it's bad. It's not great. Yeah,
I think so.
But as a Star Wars fan, there's like enough shit in there that's like, oh, that's cool. Ooh, he's on that thing. Ooh, he shot the weapon. Oh, there's that character from my childhood. There's enough of that bullshit in there that I can't hate it. Like I still had a really good time and enjoyed it and liked it for what it is. And then like we talked briefly on air how like this show is basically, it's just a kid's show, you know? It's like Saturday morning cartoons. You called it Star Wars, but Xenia Warrior Princess. And if that's what your expectation is, like it's fine. It works. Were there things in there that I wish they would have done differently? Yeah, absolutely. I could nitpick the hell out of that show. But at the end of the day, I still had fun. I still want to see what's next in the Disney Plus Star Wars television averse. I think Bad Batch season 2 comes out May 4th and then May 25th, I think it is Obi-Wan Kenobi, which I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah, Kenobi should be awesome. Should be. And then I think it's Boba set up Mando season 3 to be quite entertaining.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I would be happy if they never did another Boba Fett show and just brought that character in from time to time. Because that would be neat. Like, oh, it's Boba Fett and Finnick. I love those guys. But then, like, as a whole show, it's like, ugh.
Yeah. Actually, I laughed really hard because there's the Boba Fett theme song, you know, that plays. And when I first heard it, the first show, I was like, I don't know if I like that. But then by episode 6, I'm like, yeah, this theme's a banger. And then episode 7 ends, they play the theme, but it's like a slightly different version of the theme. But I hated it because it pulled the curtains behind why they made the theme what it is. And it's literally just the composer saying Boba Fett's name, like Fett, Boba Fett. And I'm like,
OK, because I thought I just heard it correctly for the first time, but it had been just more clear.
Yeah, they definitely altered it. So it's a different version. I
never noticed he was like Boba, 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 and then Fett in the background. I never noticed that.
Yeah. In the previous theme, like the main theme that played for most of the season, it was a much more like that.
Yeah.
And then in the, they made it, I guess, more of a triumphant, like, this is the end of the series. It's Fett, Boba Fett. And it's like, don't
do that. I'll be honest with you, though. The original theme song, I listened to that, like, by choice, by itself, while I was writing the other day. I do enjoy it.
It is good. And did you know that it's actually completely stolen from a Dutch television show from, no, like, the 70s?
That makes me sad.
Well, the composer is... Or wait, maybe it's not Dutch. Maybe it's Norwegian.
As long as they're credited.
I don't know if they are. I really haven't looked into it, but I think the guy on Screen Crush pulled up like the intro for this. I think it's Norwegian. This Norwegian show from the 90s or so. And it's like 100% the same exact theme, but obviously less produced, right?
That's a damn shame. Yeah. Disney, you got the money to plug those people when you do that to them. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a damn shame.
The other thing that I've been streaming this week was actually from a suggestion of you, Chris.
Mm.
And it is a show. You can stream it on Apple TV Plus. It is called The After Party.
I guess I had forgotten when I saw your tweet that you hadn't been watching it, and I told you should be.
Yeah, I had been watching Murderville that week, and you had suggested watching.
Oh, that's right. I told you it was Party. Chris Miller, and you were like, "Fuck yeah, on it."
Yeah, Chris Miller, and then you like read me the cast, which it's like Tiffany Haddish, Sam Richardson, Zoe Zhao. What was that?
Ben Schwartz.
Yeah, Ben Schwartz, Alana Glazer, Dave Franco, like really, really funny people.
Yeah,
and so I started watching it, and dude, this might. I know it's early in the year 2022, but. There's only, what, 5 episodes out currently?
Something like that. Maybe
4 or 5?
6, but they're just saying 6 seems like being a dick because it's like, that's one more.
Yeah, there's like between 4 and 6 episodes. It's not finished, but this is already a contender for my favorite thing of this year. It is so good. My jam because it is a really, really funny whodunit. It's got incredibly talented people in it that are just a joy to watch. I love Sam Richardson specifically. The concept behind it where every person, you know, Tiffany Haddish is like, I want to watch your mind movie. Cause everyone is the main character of their own film. So when she's interviewing the murder suspects, it all takes place in a different genre of film. So like you mentioned last week,
a different genre.
Yeah, you mentioned last week, like, one is a romantic film, one is a Fast and the Furious film, which the Fast and the Furious film is so funny. But it's so well written where, like, when you watch the next episode and you see, like, that other character's point of view of the same event, there are slight changes that are different.
It's kind of a Last Duel kind of thing.
Yeah, where you like get different perspectives.
There's that, but also, like, a slight reveal that's actually inane, and that's what I get the biggest kick out of, like, writing-wise. How many episodes in are you?
I've watched all of the ones that are available. So all the way up to, I think the episode's called High School.
Did you watch? So you watched...
It's the school party genre.
The St. Patrick's Day...
Yes.
Party. Okay. Yeah. So you're all the way caught up. So there's... I don't even care. This is a slight spoiler, but it's really not. It's just like a... If you haven't been watching it yet, I want to show you... Like, this might sell it to you because this is how the level of cleverness that is in the show. But there, in the first episode, I believe, in Anik's point of view, Sam Richardson's character, he was drunk out of his mind that night. So he's like, yeah. So then I did a bunch of flaming Jello shots off the counter. And it's like a tiny detail. He just says he did a flaming Jello shot. Then like 2 episodes later, someone else's point of view, I think it's Ben Schwartz in episode 3, you find out that he was drinking candles. They weren't flaming Jello shots. He was wasted. So he was just drinking candle wax. And it doesn't matter. That doesn't affect the plot. It's not even really like brought up in a huge way. It's just, if you remember that he had mentioned flaming Jello shots, it's funny. And if you didn't remember that, it doesn't matter. And that kind of shit is what I love about this show. Like the really tiny details that they have fun with the different perspectives with.
Yeah, there's so the first episode, there's a situation where Ike Barinholtz's character, Brett, who is like the douchey kind of bully-esque character, is like, hey, if anyone gets with my ex-wife, I'm going to kick their ass. And Sam Richardson has a crush on her. And he's been like flirting with her the whole night. Well, there's a point in the first episode where he's like, you, Sam Richardson, I'm going to kick your ass. And so they're like, get in the car and run. They're like running away from him, right? But when you see it from Brett's point of view, he's trying to be a good dad, because it was set up before that even though he's a shitty husband, he's a really good dad, and his daughter's there. And his daughter's like, I can't go to sleep without my stuffed koala. And that was something that she gave Sam Richardson early in the night, even in his flashback. So you get this thing where he's like, he's actually going after Sam, like, hey man, I need my daughter's koala back. Can I get that back? Yeah. And he's so drunk, he's like, he's trying to kick my ass. And like, they're getting in the car. And it's just really clever stuff like that. And you mentioned Ben Schwartz, like, in his perception of what's happening, he's always there for Anik, Sam Richardson, to the point where there's like part when they show up at the party, Alana Glazer's character, Chelsea, is that her name? Mm-hmm. Chelsea, who has this, her character is like, oh, she's drunk and on drugs all the time and no one can trust her. It looks like she purposely gives him a shot of vodka. And but right before Sam Richardson drinks it, Ben Schwartz nonchalantly swaps the drink so he's actually drinking water. But then in the next episode, you find out that she actually gave him a glass of water because he was trying to get vodka, but she didn't want him to get more drunk. So Ben Schwartz accidentally just gives him more liquor.
Yeah.
And it's like clever shit like that. That's really, really funny. And they don't make a big deal of it in the moment, but you catch these tiny little things that are happening constantly in the show. It's
brilliant. Love shit like that. I love when a screenwriter makes you feel smart. Or trusts that you can figure things out and then leaves little nuggets for you. And I think everybody appreciates that. And Lord and Miller are really good about that. And they're just having a ball with this stuff. So
yeah,
I love the After Party. I'm really touched that you're loving it so much. I knew that you would, but it's so still good. I'm glad you're really liking it even more than I thought you would. And that's a good surprise.
I was so bummed last night because the way the last episode that's currently out, and like, oh man, I can't wait to watch the next episode. And Apple TV Plus does this thing where they will have the icon for next week's episode up, but underneath it, it'll say available whatever day it is. So in my head, I'm like, oh, I got one more episode I get to watch before there's no more. But really, it was like, oh, gotcha. Yeah, I hate psych.
That feature's a thing. And then it has the date that it will be released real tiny.
Yeah.
It's so like, next week's the finale, right? Zoe's point of view will be the finale, right?
Is that the finale?
I would guess. I don't know for sure. I think it's that would be episode 7, if I'm correct. I didn't do any research because that's not the kind of show that this is. But I have a feeling it's nearing its end. I mean, it's 3 weeks in. They dropped 3 episodes the first time.
There's 8 episodes.
And so this last week was 6. So there's 2 more.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll get Zoe's POV and then a finale. Okay. I'm really excited about it. By the way, speaking of movie scores I listen to or TV show scores, I listen to the opening of After Party while I'm writing all the time too. I love it. And I think that the opening credits are phenomenally done, the animation.
I'm loving this new sort of renaissance of the fun whodunit. Like, I think that was started with Knives Out.
For
but
sure.
Like last year we got Only Murders in the Building, which was fucking amazing. Well, it might
have really started with Murder on the Orient Express.
That like wasn't kinda a fun whodunit though. That was just
I didn't even watch it, but like, that's the first like revitalization I can think of. And
it's not even a good whodunit. That movie's not good.
Who did it? I don't care.
Here, you want me to spoil it for you? Everyone did it. That's the end of that movie. We all did the murder. Like, that's literally that is the ending of that movie. It's terrible. It's not satisfying. But
I heard Death on the Nile is not great either.
It didn't look great to me.
You could have predicted that. Sure. That was phenomenal. This is great.
Yeah, this is great. Watch this. Watch Murders in the Building. Watch Knives Out, and you'll have a great time.
I still have to finish Only Murders in the Building. It's one of those shows I was really enjoying, and just
the weekly format.
The next episode, I was like, nah. For no reason. There's so much stuff to watch.
This might be controversial because I know Andy is definitely on the opposite side of the fence from this topic as I am, but I hate weekly releases. I do not like episodic releases. That's just not how I consume content. I know it's technically good for the conversation of the show, right? But I hate it because like I will fall into the trap where like, oh man, I'm loving Peacemaker. Peacemaker's so good. And then I'd like, well, I'll wait for the next week and then I get busy and I forget like, oh shit, Peacemaker, is that out? Did that finish? Like I run into that all the time. I don't like it.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I use my Apple ID to subscribe to stuff but for whatever reason, I get push notifications. It's probably because I have Apple TV and all my streaming networks are through Apple TV. That's what it is. So the benefit of that, to your point, is that I'll be up here with you making streaming things or making a TikTok or writing or something, and it'll say Peacemaker now available on HBO Max. It'll be a push notification on my phone. So maybe get that set up somehow, Steve, because that's handy. I don't think you actually disagree with Andy. I think you know that it is nice to have a weekly global conversation about a show and have time to digest and pick apart things. But selfishly, all of us agree it's awesome to just be able to fucking plop our lazy, miserable asses down and watch an entire show for 4 hours.
I've been thinking about it, though. And this is another, if you will allow me, I will bring up more evidence for my case.
Oh, please do.
So here, right now, so I won't do that anymore.
No, keep it going.
But like the week, I've noticed with these episodic weekly shows, you know, it invites a lot of people. Of course, people are going to come up with fan theories or, you know, just, oh, I think the show is going this way. Oh, the show is going to go that way. Oh, it's going to go this way. But it never does. Like that's whatever fan theories that people come up with for these shows, they never are the thing that happens. And even, but it's never satisfying because either it's not the thing that people build up for it to be and they're let down. They talk about how shit the show is, or it is exactly what they planned it to be. And everyone's disappointed. Like, oh, well, I could have come up with that. I saw it coming a mile away. And it's like, if you just, like, I think Book of Boba Fett, for instance, if Book of Boba Fett came out and everything was like, bam, it's all there. Watch it all today. It would not be nearly as controversial or like people wouldn't be like so mad about it as they are. I think people just would digest it like, oh, that was the show. Okay. For what it was, good. You know, it's like Game of Thrones is another example. Like people like built so much about what they were going to do with Game of Thrones. And then like none of that stuff happened and people were so pissed. And there are other reasons to be pissed off about that show as well. But sure, you know what I'm saying?
I don't think the show would have reached the heights that it did. Like other than season five, for six straight seasons, everybody was genuinely shocked and surprised in a good way each week and then talked about it all week. And then as a community watched it together each Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I can remember tweeting, you know, at 10:02 PM right after the episode on a Sunday night and just reading through all the gifts and reactions and stuff and everybody laughing together, like, oh, Joffrey like this when he, you know, and it's just, it was Joffrey be like, it was fun. It was like a communal experience. Whereas contrast that with The Witcher, I don't think reaches the heights of most of the peak Game of Thrones as far as like storytelling and production. Mm-hmm. But I do think The Witcher is a phenomenal show. And the conversation around The Witcher each season is about 3 days long. And that's a travesty. Because everybody watched the entire fucking thing because it's so good. They got it all out of their system. And then you're not going to read Vanity Fair's episode 3 recap. That's 600 words. Mm-hmm. Because you went right into episode 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And you don't give a fuck. Like, you know, so there isn't that. There's nothing for the journalists to do. There's nothing much to talk about other than a few overarching themes. And then it's done. Right. So
sure. And I totally understand. And I like, part of me is like, I'm wrong. Like, I know I'm wrong, but there is that part of me that just feels like, yeah, but I'm also allowing outside people to color my perception of the show because I'm allowing people to like write up these synopses and all this stuff. And I don't know. And I kind of like watching things, at least the first time I watched them, uninterrupted. And like, this is me and the filmmaker and art that they made. And I want to know how it affects me before I find outside influences to color, you know, for good or for bad. But I think it's a good conversation to have.
You like to get intimate with the art.
I do. I light candles. I put on some Sting.
Mm-hmm.
I get naked and I rub myself with cocoa butter. You know, that's how I watch Moonfall.
Star Wars. Moonfall. Look at Boba Fett. By the way, why wasn't there a Boba Tea, Boba Fett marketing bonanza? I feel like that's a missed opportunity.
I don't know, big Boba Tea.
Go down to your local, you know, tea shop and get some Book of Boba Tea.
I would do that. Chris, what you been streaming?
Little green tapioca gels. I have been streaming a few things. My streaming things is a little weird this month. Wow, fuck that up this week. I rewatched Blockers. I believe it's a 2018 comedy with John Cena et al. And what's his name? Brett from...
Ike Barinholtz.
Yeah, Ike Barinholtz is in it. He's awesome. Leslie Mann, also in it.
Is Leslie Mann in it? I didn't know that.
She is. She's one of the three parents. And anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there that it holds up. It's a phenomenal raunchy comedy. It's up there with, it's like Superbad, Blockers, and what was the one that came out recently too? It was like everybody was calling it the Superbad for Girls.
Superbad for Girls.
Yeah, come on. It just came out like 2 years ago. It's a really, really good comedy, but I've only seen it once.
I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I can't think of what you're thinking
of. I won't fucking allow it. Olivia Wilde directed it. Booksmart.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's right up there. I think it's really, really funny. And this is where it taught me that John Cena was funny. So it was interesting to watch Blockers after the majesty that is the Suicide Squad and Peacemaker. Mm-hmm. Because this was when I watched Blockers, I was like, dude, he's really fucking funny. That's surprising. And but now I'm used to it. So I got to like see more nuance of it. And it was a really touching, heartwarming movie about, you know, letting your kids go and letting them do what they're going to do and trusting them to have, you know, act out the morals and lessons that you've taught them and not, you know, being controlling anymore. So as a parent, you know, he's only eight, so I don't have to worry about that anytime soon. But anyway, so I just really enjoyed Blockers. If you haven't seen it in a while or maybe ever, I would highly recommend that you do that. I own the physical copy. I'm sure it's streamable somewhere. I'm a physical media guy. I also started watching Murderville. I won't talk much about it. Steve waxed poetically last week, but it is the improv show with Will Arnett and various guests. It's the type of show it was highly entertaining, but it faded quickly for me. Mm-hmm. The shtick, it reminds me of like a game show. Not quite a game show, but
it does have that game show kind of quality to it. There is something about that. Yeah, I totally get.
You ever watch like Impractical Jokers on True TV?
Yes.
Like it's that kind of thing.
I have friends who for the longest time would say the last movie they saw in a movie theater before the pandemic was the Impractical Jokers movie.
Oh no.
And they were like lamenting that that was the choice they made.
That was a lamentable choice. No pandemic, right? Like, what are you doing? And that's what I mean. It's like this show is really because I like Impractical Jokers. My son loves it, or he went through a phase. So like we would watch 7 or 8 episodes of that in a row just because he's really digging it and I love him. And I wasn't not entertained, but I didn't like feel good about myself. Right. So it's that combo of things. So eventually I'm like, and I never do this, and Andy's not on the show, so I won't disparage him, but he's a person who will do this unironically with really, really good movies. And I yell at him for it. But like I had Netflix pulled up on my phone with Murderville playing and like propped up on a shelf while I was doing the dishes and stuff. And that felt like nothing wrong with that at all because of the kind of show that it is.
Sure. Yeah.
But I wouldn't do that with like Dune or something. You know what I mean? Like that would be like, what are you doing?
Don't be doing that with Dune.
But I feel like if Andy were here, he would laugh, but Andy would do that. You know, Andy would dune up while he's doing the dishes on his phone. Right. And like, that's something about Andy that I'm like, what's wrong with you? But that's Murderville. It is a laugh. I just think the shtick fades pretty quickly. But I'm really impressed with the overall conceit. It gets a little played out for me. I didn't even get to the third episode, which is the only one I wanted to watch, was the Camille Nanjiani one. I didn't even have, there's nothing.
I haven't watched it since last week. I watched the first 3 episodes. I haven't gone back.
There's nothing linear about it. I could have went straight to the Camille episode, but yeah. For some reason that bothered me. And so, but I was pooped out by the time it was time to watch the Camille one.
What if I miss incredibly important story beats about Will Arnett's character?
Right. I need to know more about Terry Seattle. You know, what's the backstory? I also blind bought. So I went to Best Buy actually with Andy. And he was looking for like an HDMI splitter. And I looked through the Blu-rays as I am wont to do. And I bought a Requiem for a Dream steelbook. Didn't want to feel suicidal, so I didn't watch that movie yet. But I also bought a movie called The Spine of Night. And it's an animated movie
cool
that
title.
I put on my Letterboxd watch list and forgotten about like 9 months ago because I saw that it did well at a film festival, put it on my watch list, and then forgot about it. Picked up this DVD because the artwork was cool, or Blu-ray rather. It was a steel book, so it was really nice. Have you heard of the movie The Spine of Night?
I don't think I have, actually.
I don't know why you would. It's an obscure animated film.
You're an idiot. You wouldn't know.
But it's not even that. It's, I'm not trying to be like a douche. It's just like, I don't know why I know what it is. But it stars Patton Oswalt, Frank Mangina.
Okay, I do know this. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it Joe Manganiello or Frank? What am I doing?
Joe Manganiello.
It's Joe Manganiello. Is it Manganiello?
Manganiello. Who knows? Who's to say?
I think it's,
who's
to say? It's Italian. It's got to be like Manganiello.
Manganiello.
Right? It's got him in it. Lucy Lawless. So anyway, I saw those actors' names on it. Bought it. $20. Fuck it. Don't even know what it is. Took it home. This movie, like, I loved it at first, and then I hated it, and then I loved it by the end, if that makes sense. It took me on a roller coaster. The animation is really weird. It's like purposefully not that great.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
But then also beautiful at times, if that makes any sense. Did you ever, it's adult, so just don't be fooled by the fact that it's animated. It's not for kids. It's ultra violent. There's a lot of nudity. It's not sexual, but there's a lot of nudity. I don't know if you ever watched Heavy Metal.
Yeah.
Those animated films from like, it's like that. Like some of it's really like psychedelic, but it's high fantasy and
super
really
cool.
Out there. Yeah. Yeah. Super cool.
Super badass.
But back then, I feel like you know more about animation than I do. You know how there's like this, like the lines at the edges of the characters kind of like vibrate. Mm-hmm. And I think that was by virtue of the technology they had at the time. Whereas, and I don't know if that's true or not, it might've been a style, but that's what in my bones, I feel like it was just a technology thing. So The Spine of Night does that. Like it's got this like old school looking weirdness to it, almost like it's sort of a juvenile, like not great of a drawing, but you get the sense that it's on purpose, so you're kind of like squinting like, do I like this art that they're going for? Anyway, I check it out if you can find it anywhere. It's fucking weird and really cool and at times really beautiful. That's called The Spine of Night. And then finally, I was actually really, really pleasantly surprised by this. Is a movie called Kimmy just dropped. It's available on HBO Max. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh and written by David Cope is how I've been pronouncing it. There's a little bit of a, and I think that was off air, but there's some controversy about that. It might be David Kep, but he wrote Jurassic Park and a bunch of other super crazy good movies. The original Spider-Man. And it stars Zoe Kravitz. Did you watch this movie by chance yet, Steve, or hear about it even?
No, I had never even heard of it until you had posted your review on TikTok about it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the algorithm knew that I had just become aware of this movie, because the moment I turn on my app, you know how you turn on your Apple TV, it'll like give you suggestions at the very top above the apps. It was like front and center, like, boom, watch this movie. And I'm like, oh man, Chris was just talking about that. So I'm probably going to watch it this week, because
I thought it was great. It's sort of a Rear Window, Disturbia kind of thing, but it's not like a direct homage or anything. It's just got those vibes because due to COVID, she is stuck in her house. But this is kind of in the post-COVID, still COVID era that we're all still in. I just thought the script was brilliant. A lot of the assholes on TikTok are like, the way I described it, they're like, it sounds like woke garbage. But the reason I brought up everything that I brought up was, it really deftly handles that, because I think we're in this awkward space where when our media kind of ignores that COVID ever happened in like a earth-based story, it's kind of weird feeling because it's not our current reality. But at the same time, if they harp on it too much, it's kind of like, Jesus fucking Christ, if I wanted that, I'd go outside. So I think that this movie really acknowledges that it exists, but at the same time doesn't beat you over the head with it. Like, mm-hmm. they'll just be like a surgical mask in her, like the bowl of keys by her front door, shit like that. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, okay, this just feels lived in and real. And she was always, before COVID, she was an agoraphobic anyway. So her character is like really not doing okay. Mm-hmm. But what she does for work is she analyzes recordings of this Kimmy device. So it's basically an Alexa. And so she has to go through, and this is probably what employees actually do, which is scary, but also like that makes sense that this is how they get smarter and smarter. She'll go through like failed instances. So it'll be like, she'll listen to device number 008972. And it's like, Kimmy, play Oxytocin by Billie Eilish. And it'll be like, ordering Billie Eilish's new t-shirt from Amazon. No, what the fuck? No. And like, so that happens when you're talking to Alexa. And it's, I guess maybe a person does have to go through those and like compute, like, this is slang for this. So next time they say that, this is what they mean, blah, 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 blah. So that's her job. And in the process of doing that, she hears what she believes to be a violent crime happening on somebody's Kimmy device. And so she starts to investigate that with corporate. They kind of try to shut her down, blah, blah, blah. And then shenanigans ensue. I just thought the script was really tight. It was really brilliant. There's a lot of references. There's some Chekhov stuff. Everything was just quick and fun and smart, handled in a good way. And I was like, holy shit, like this might be on my top 10 at the end of the year. It just crept up on me. Like it ballooned inside me. You know, as the credits were rolling, I was like, that was a hootin' good time. And by the time I got to the kitchen, I was like, I think I really liked that movie.
That was a rootin' tootin' good time.
Yeah. Then I got upstairs to review it and realized I loved it. And then here it is, you know, the next day, I'm like, you know what? I think that's one of the best movies of the year potentially. So it's getting bigger and bigger, but Zoe Kravitz, it was really fucking good. She sold that performance. The entire movie almost is her. And it's got a cameo performance from Derek Delgadio. Do you remember who that is?
No,
the guy who did In and of Itself, that mind-blowing thing. Oh,
that guy. Okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The sad magician.
The sad magician.
I saw his... He tweeted this morning when I woke up. I looked at Twitter and he had written, I can't wait to get the deluge of tweets about... Is that the fucking sad magician in this new HBO movie? Like, and that was from him. So it made me chuckle. I was like, the sad magician. That's a good description. Yeah. Anyway, that's Kimmy. Sad it's on magician. HBO Max. And I think it's crazy. We live in a world where you can get the new Steven Soderbergh movie straight in your house day one. Like, we all just take that for granted. Wild. Like, it's normal now. Yeah. Isn't it fucking wild?
It is wild. To be fair though, like I love it. I do love it. Like, I'll always want to go see, I always want to go to the movies and like experience things in the theater. But there are things like this month where I can't get out and I can't go to the theater as much as I'd like. But I would like, oh, we got to watch fucking Moonfall. I'll watch that at home. Like,
yeah, that's stuff like definitely that. A house movie for sure. Damn you, Andy. But we're running out of time, so we better get moving on to our main event, our discussion of on-screen romances and love in film for Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Oh, happy Valentine's Day. Chris, guess what?
What? Am I your Valentine?
You're my Valentine.
Oh my God. I was hoping it would be true.
I got you some of that candy that tastes like chalk.
Oh my God. It's like I'm channeling Lola from Big Mouth. If you're a fan of that show.
Nailed
I'm
it.
I'm back, you fucking Brussels sprout. That's a Nick Kroll voice. He's a good voice actor. Speaking of voice actors. So how was your journey in thinking about romance and film, Stephen? What was your metric? Did things come to mind immediately?
No, it's actually really hard. You know, listeners of the show know that this year's been really rough for me romantically. So when I was thinking about like, oh, what are some romantic movies that I love? Like I thought of like romantic films I've seen with previous relationships, my wife specifically and others as well. And it just kind of got me down a bit, to be honest, like, oh man, this is kind of a bummer. I'm so alone.
No, I know it all makes it worse, but I think it's all fake. And that's why, not that love is fake, but the whole.
You mean the whole, the construct of a Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day specifically. But I also, when I was thinking about it, I always kind of gravitate towards films where, at least romantic films, where the love is complicated and has layers and is frequently messy, because I think that we hold a lot of our actual relationships up to this pedestal of the romantic comedy and how we've been sold that it should be, and that that is actually damning to many of our actual relationships. Like, why don't I feel like I'm Richard Gere and he's Julia Roberts, and, you know,
why don't I feel that?
And why isn't this? Well, he's definitely not like Ryan Gosling, and I don't know why, or vice versa. You know, like the, just like she is just definitely not Rachel McAdams. So this is not working out. And we literally never fight and cry in the rain and then make love ever. We've never done that. She hates being out in the rain.
No one loves being out in the rain.
So when I think of movies that just really, really speak to me, it's well, a lot of the movies that we talked about for our Patreon episode that we need to record here soon. The Before trilogy specifically. I think that that's a phenomenal set of films. It's mostly a series of conversations and philosophizing, but takes place, you know, 9 years apart each time, and shows the, like, a realistic growth and sometimes growing apart in a love that is very real still, despite that. And I love Noah Baumbach's A Marriage Story. I think that movie is one of my favorite movies of all time. And they don't even end up together at the end of that film.
And yeah, many of the films that I gravitate towards that are quote unquote romantic or films about love, most of them end where the characters don't end up together, which is, I don't know what that says about me, where I'm like, yeah, break up.
Well, it's probably elevated. It probably reflects where you're at right now, which is fine. Like, that's what's great about art. But have you ever heard that speech that Ethan Hawke gives on art and film itself? And he's like sitting in his living room. He's doing that whole interview. I'll send it to you from YouTube if you haven't, but it's beautiful. But I'm going to butcher it. This isn't even called a paraphrase, but he basically goes on this rant about how, you know, art is what it is. You can take it or leave it for most people until your father dies, or your son's hurt, or your wife leaves you. And then you see this poem, or you read this poem, or you see a film, or you hear this song that just perfectly encapsulates a feeling that you have no words for. And at that point, art is no longer a luxury. And just the way that he says it gives me chills. And like, that's what I think of when I think of and Ethan Hawke's in probably the best romantic movie of all time, which is, you know, Before Sunrise, and the subsequent Before Midnight and Before Sunset. Those are just, the Before trilogy is phenomenal exploration of love and what it really looks like. But there's some in La La Land too. I think a lot of people think it's a little bit shticky that they don't get together at the end. There's a, I don't know if you've heard this joke, but a lot of critics are like, the film doesn't do a great job of explaining why they can't be together, and it's really frustrating. And I can see that for sure, but I just really loved that they weren't together, you know, that it just, life took them for really no reason in separate directions. And
yeah, that happens sometimes.
That's been my experience. Exactly.
That happens most times, in fact.
Yeah. And, so I really appreciated that. And, but there's some other movies that I love my Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. I love me some Titanic. You know, Dirty Dancing, Pretty Woman. Like, I'm a sucker for those, for sure. Anything John Holmes.
Yeah, those are all really, really great picks. I was thinking about, you mentioned Love Story. Marriage Story. And I was like, I really love that movie, but I don't know if that counts, because that's more about a breakup and not really about a getting together. But it's an important story, because those characters still care about each other. They're just separating. And it's beautiful.
The reason I think it counts is because I do believe those characters do love each other. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to acknowledge that in real life and just still move on from that. That, you know, because movies sell us, art sells us the love is enough to overcome all odds. And that's a beautiful thought. But I also think that's it can be damning. So, okay, because this didn't work, that must mean that she doesn't love me. And I disagree. I don't think that's true. And that's what I love about that movie. Mm-hmm. Having gone through a very serious breakup right before I watched that movie probably had a lot to do with that. But still, That's what art's for, right? But I like comedic romances a lot. And not just the, like a hard comedy sometimes is what I really need. Speaking of divorce, but then a second romance to save the day. One of my favorite movies of all time, one of my favorite romances of all time, and it was brought up by Enza on Twitter today when I asked, is Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Absolutely love that movie. I think it's hilarious. And Jason Segel and Mila Kunis in that film, I think is a wonderful example of one of my favorite on-screen romances that I think it kind of grows organically and is real to me because they go through some trouble as well. And I watched that movie so many times in my life and I get a kick out of it every time. That was one of the DVDs. I've told this story before, but I was near homelessness at one point and all I had in my possession was like 5 or 6 DVDs and a way to watch them. And that was one of them. So it was the only comedy. So I watched that a ton of times and it was goddamn brilliant every time.
I am going to throw out a couple of curveballs, some oddball choices, I think, but I think they're valid. At the time when these movies came out, I think they're unusual choices for love films. I think people might not necessarily think of these initially, but you know, growing up when I was younger, like in the mid-aughts, and you know, I'm just kind of coming into my own as an adult, and I'm in a pretty serious relationship with someone, and you know, the movie from 2008, WALL-E. I adore that movie. Like the romance between a robot named WALL-E and a robot named Eva. Neither of them they can't really speak. All they can really say is their own damn names.
They're like Pokemon.
Yeah, they just say their names. But the way that director Andrew Stanton is able to kind of just, he really sells the relationship between the two. And you really care for it. There's WALL-E. Do you remember the musical that he's listening to in the movie? Like he has like
I do remember that. I don't know the name of it.
I wish I could remember the name of the movie. It's like it's a popular musical, but every time that
it's like Umbrella's a Cherbourg or something, isn't it?
I'm gonna have to look it up. But every time the musical beats hit where like, I think the kid, and that is all like that. When
it's Hello Dolly.
It's Hello Dolly. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Every time that song hits, it just like tugs at my heartstrings. Like, Oh, they love each other.
That's not an oddball. It's a brilliant choice of,
but isn't it weird that like I would be like, oh man, I love that two robots that are animated, they get together. Like real life people, I don't give a shit about, but these cute little robots.
No, I think that sometimes, especially in film, the way to, because love is such an ephemeral, hard to describe thing. And I think it's healthy to get away from the cliche is just to show it in an oddball way like that. The only reason I didn't bring up Shape of Water and talk about that for 20 minutes yet is because I'm almost positive that was my big talking point last year on Valentine's Day. So I wanted to try and do something a little different for listeners that would have remembered that. But yeah, I mean, if you know me, you know, I adore that film. And I would talk about Y Tu Mama Tambien a lot too, but I think that film's more about sexuality than love per se, even though that's a huge part of it, right?
Am I right, guys?
Yeah, I think WALL-E's a phenomenal choice. Speaking of odd, I'll throw a curveball to you. This is the one he didn't explain. So I threw it out on Twitter and it was last minute, so I didn't get much feedback. But Enza had responded, some of her favorites, a longtime listener of the show. And so did
streaming things.
So did streaming things sometimes guest Alex. And he said the Before trilogy, of course, Casablanca, of course, Eternal Sunshine, of course, Wish Andy Was Here. Princess Bride, I think, is a great choice.
Oh, that's it's good.
And he also said Midsommar.
Ooh.
It's not even that it's like it's an oddball. I don't understand. Where's the romance in that movie?
I don't know if there's, maybe he's coming at it from the way we were coming at a Marriage Story, where it's a story about people separating and letting go of.
Well, it's not even just separation though. Like,
way.
Like Marriage Story is about like two humans that make mistakes, and Midsommar is like, he's actively really an asshole and super toxic. And, mm-hmm. and then she's joins up with a gang of Swedish murderers. So, but you know, hey, it's I wish he was here. I wish he was here. We got some other good throwouts though. Sam, friend of the show, Sam said When Harry Met Sally, classic for sure.
Classic. I'll have what she's having.
And then Carmelita, just our resident, just film historian. I mean, she knows more about, she's forgotten more about film than I'll ever know. She threw out It Happened One Night from the 1930s, I believe, 1934. Valley Girl, Secretary's good. That's an interesting romance for sure. You know,
Secretariat.
Okay. Yeah, no. That's Maggie Gyllenhaal and Spadertron. Leaving Las Vegas and Untamed Heart.
Oh, those are all very good.
Somebody commented In the Mood for Love. That's the Wong Kar-wai film. I was actually going to watch that earlier in preparation for this. So anyway,
I've got a couple more.
Some of the listeners' thoughts. Steve, lay some more love on me, baby.
One romance film that I actually really, really like because it's unique is it's a comedy, but it's The Big Sick. That's Kumail Nanjiani's like big movie from a couple years ago. Was it 2017?
Somewhere around there. Yeah. Really? I love that movie. It's just like one of those I loved and then never thought about again for some reason. I think it's criminally underrated by me as well.
The concept alone is really good. So it's like a romance film, but because his romantic partner, based off a true story of, you know, Kumail and his wife, she has some sort of sickness. Is it cancer? I forget what it is, but she falls sick.
It's big, whatever it is.
It's like a really bad where she's like practically in a coma. And the first time he meets her parents is because she's in the hospital. So it's almost like he's romancing her parents while she's potentially dying.
Yeah.
And there's like, it's very lighthearted and it's beautiful and very funny, but it also like makes you, it tugs at the heartstrings. It makes you cry. It really kind of reminds you of like this fucked up world that we live in, and we can make connections anywhere. And you know what you do for the people that you care about in their worst moments.
Probably Ray Romano's best performance of all time.
I think so. Yeah. That 9/11 joke is still, I think, one of the best 9/11 jokes of all time.
Yeah, it's up there.
If you can say that, if you can make a list of 9/11 jokes.
Yeah, sure.
You know, if you can make a comedy out of an awful, awful tragedy, this movie has the best one of all time. the greatest. Don't at me, okay? No, nobody at me on this. But the
at CB13.
At CB13, the greatest romance of all time, hands down, is the first 10 minutes of Up.
No one's gonna at you except to say bravo, sir.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that is the best romantic movie of all time.
That is the platonic ideal of love though, right? Like that's what we all be craving, but there's way too much Marriage Story.
It's got everything though. It's got, you know, girl meets boy. They have a meet cute. They all get together. They suffer tragedy together, but you know, their love becomes even stronger and they live out their years and they're happy together. And then one of them dies. And it's really sad.
At a healthy old age.
Yeah. They lived a great life together, but then you get to see, you know, when you live so much of your life as two, you know, you were bonded with a person for much of your life. When that person inevitably goes away, you know, how do you fill the hole that is half of your personality essentially at that point? And it's, you know, and then the movie begins after that, which is so crazy. Like, it's like this insane prologue to a movie about an old man with balloons and a kid, and they find a weird bird and a dog that talks, you know?
Yeah.
But the first 10 minutes is maybe like one of the best encapsulations of like what people aspire, you know, what everyone hopes their relationships would be. But,
for sure.
But it's that reminder that like, even though you could have like the greatest love of all time, you know, all love, all life ends in tragedy. But that doesn't mean your life has to end. That doesn't mean you cannot, you know, remember the good and move on. You know, it's a great movie overall, but those 10 minutes are phenomenal.
100% agree. 100% agree. And I think really only one question needs to be asked when we're talking about on-screen romances. And this is really what we should have led with. Are you team Edward or team Jacob, Steve?
I
can't believe you have to think about this.
I'm team Edward, I think.
You think?
Yeah. I've never seen those movies, but I think I would be team Edward just because I like
it. It's like the Bloods and the Crips. You can't be unsure about it.
Okay. Well, all right. Let me, you know, I'm going to take a blood oath. I've got my knife out. I'm, you know, slicing my palm. So you see the blood, Chris, my blood's coming out. We're touching, we're blood brothers right now. And I'm going to say
Edward. Team Edward is the only answer.
Yeah. The other one is so weird. What's the other one's name? Jacob.
Yeah.
The most uncomfortable I've ever been in my life was maybe when the second movie came out and I had to work at the movie theater. And it was when I worked at the Florence Theater nearby.
I think it's New Moon.
New Moon. Yes. That's the second one. And you know how that theater was one of the first theaters in our area to have like a dine-in seating, but the dine-in seating was separate from general seating. So there was like, what do you call that when there's like a second stage in a theater? Mm-hmm.
Like a balcony or a dais or
Like a balcony. There was balcony seating, and if you were up there, you could drink and you had servers come to you. But like below that was just general movie theater seating. The
plebes, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember that movie came out and a group of like 25 women, and I say women because they were all cougars. They were older women. They dressed up to the nines, and these ladies were like hammered when they showed up, and they only had one thing on their mind, and that was hot young men bod. And so they were like exceptionally flirty with every single dude that was working, but also like really obnoxious in the movie. Like whenever Jacob would come on screen, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, boy. Yeah." So unsettling. Cause all I could think about was like, what if this was the reverse? Where these were like all a bunch of 40-year-old dudes who were like, yeah, Kristen Stewart, baby, yeah, bend over for me.
For sure. It would not be a good time. But, you know, rough. That's so less often the issue that I'll just, God love them, you know?
Yeah.
They're a menace to no parts of society. They were just living their best life. Tyler Lautner, I get it. By the way, what happened to that? Anybody on Team Jacob is they bet on the wrong horse, right?
They really did. Whatever happened to that guy, Taylor Lautner? Is that his name?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know. I don't think he's doing anything.
He was in like a couple like action, like direct to DVD, like Bruce Willis style action movies in the early aughts. But that's Bruce Willis. I haven't seen him in anything really since then. I hope he's doing okay. I hope he's still rocking those pecs. I hope he still's got those cum gutters going on. I hope he's still got that.
What did you call them?
Cum gutters.
Are you allowed to do that?
What?
Say cum gutters.
I mean, I done did it. It's too late to back out now.
He's married to someone named Dome. That's all I could find out about where he is now.
Dome.
Oh, he was in a television series in 2018 called Cuckoo. His last movie was 2016's Run the Tide.
Oh, wow. So he hasn't been in anything really.
But Taylor made it clear in interviews that acting wasn't his only source of happiness. Well, I mean, that's.
Yeah.
That's
clearly Dome is another source.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Speaking of romance. Wow. Good for you, buddy.
He found himself his own domance.
Good for you. Domance. Yes. I think that wraps up our Valentine's Day episode. I mean, you got anything else you want to say on the subject of love, Steve?
I love love. I'm a fan of it.
I love love. I love Lamp. I think the best on-screen romance is Brick and Lamp.
Oh, good. Yeah. He loves that lamp. Brick, do you really love the lamp, or are you just pointing things in the office and saying you love them?
No, I love lamp. Thank you all for listening so much. And you thought I forgot, but I didn't. You can subscribe to our Patreon. Oh, we need to cut that music, Steve. We got some important stuff.
Cutting it. We got business.
You can subscribe to our Patreon at various tiers for different rewards at any time by going to patreon.com/streamingthings. That's patreon.com/streamingthings. Thank you so much to the early adopters, the pioneers that have already subscribed to our Patreon. You do not know how grateful that we are.
Thank you so much, Phil. I love you, Phil.
Yeah, we love Phil. This is going to be a love episode.
Carmelita.
Love you, Carmelita.
You be mine. Forever yours, Carrie. I'm trying to think of other, like, you know, those chalky like hearts.
The little heart, the candy hearts that we would get in school. Yeah.
Should I look up like bad pickup lines and like,
ooh, maybe.
No, Enza, you an angel? What's that? Like, because you fall from heaven? I don't know.
did it hurt when Enza fell from heaven?
Oh, yes. That's it. Thank you. Thank you, Cake. You know, no pickup line needed. Just Cake. We love
you're sweet. I'm reading the candies now. Cutie Pie, Kiss Me.
Katie, XOXO. You're Cutie Pie. Daniel, Kiss Me.
Hot Stuff.
Sarah, Hot Stuff. What was the other one?
There's one that just says Be Cool.
Elo, Be Cool. Kyle, you're just a big, beautiful man, and I love you.
One was Love You. There you go.
So those are our patrons. Thank you guys so much for keeping the lights on here.
Thank you to our patrons. You thought I forgot, but I did not. I was saving it for the end of the show, damn it, for the real listeners. Without us, excuse me, I fucked that up. Without us, you'd be nothing.
The truth comes out.
Without you, we'd be nothing. Thank you so much. That's all we have time for this week. My name is Chris.
I'm Steve.
Andy's not here. This was Streaming Things. Happy streaming. Hooday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.